Welcome to Dreaming Machine. It's Joe here. I'm with Amy. Hi, Amy.
Hey, Joe. Hey, everyone.
So life has gotten in the way of recording more of our, let's say, formal series, like our Time Traveler's Pitch, our deep dives, things like that. We have been watching lots of great shows and like animations that we want to talk about. So we thought, let's keep it simple and do a really fun what we've been watching episode, just about like, you know, shows we're into at the moment, things you might have seen and be interested in our thoughts on it, or things you might not have heard of that you'd like to find out about, some great tips, and yeah, what we've been watching, what are we into.
Let's hit everyone with what we've been up to checking out.
And when we were doing the notes before, we've been watching a lot of shows. I don't know how we've had time to do much else, but it's great. Yeah, Amy, do you want to kick things off?
Yeah, so first off, there's a couple of shows that I've started watching that definitely have some potential, but I think it might be a while before I've seen enough to go into more of a deep dive on them. Castlevania Nocturne looks to be off to a good start. I've only seen the one episode, but so far it seems pretty good. It has a lot to live up to because the previous Castlevania series was a really good adaptation, especially when you get into later seasons, and everything they did with Isaac's character, amazing. Hopefully Nocturne, with them doing an adaptation of the absolute classic Castlevania Rondo of Blood, which has resulted in it having an updated version of one of the best pieces of music in Castlevania history, Divine Bloodlines.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully that's gonna continue to be just as good as the previous seasons were.
I've not seen any Castlevania myself, but I know that it's a very well-regarded show. People had good expectations, but it like exceeded those, and it's become quite a big
thing. It exceeded my expectations. Yeah, it's a brilliant introduction, honestly, to Castlevania for people who aren't big into their Metroidvania games.
Yeah, the game looks like really difficult. I know there's a classic PS1 game that everyone talks about that got, you know, everyone moved to 3D at the time, didn't they? And now it's like an absolute classic, but it's been like great, good games since then.
Are you thinking Symphony of the Night?
Yeah, of course.
Symphony of the Night is a superb game, yes.
Excellent. Yeah, so that's something you'll be checking out more of. I've got a similar thing, but with a much older show.
Yeah.
I kind of missed out on Star Wars, the Clone Wars TV series. So not the 2D one. I have seen the 2D one for the little shorts, which is fun, but like isn't a proper fully fledged
that
season.
That one's overlooked a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I wish I had different titles to make this discussion easier, but it's a Genndy Tarkovsky, is that his name? Like the guy who did Samurai Jack, and
yeah,
that one's great. I've got that on DVD, like both volumes of that. But I never saw the three at the time it came out. It was hard to like get unless you could buy DVDs and things or had the right kind of channel.
There was no like Disney Plus back then.
Yeah, like
I mean, it wasn't even Disney back then.
You know, as much as like you can criticize the monolithic like streamers or whatever, it did make it easier to watch this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And the movie was a bit iffy, but I heard decent things about the TV series. Anyway, now we can watch it on Disney Plus. And the first season wasn't great, I didn't think, and I skipped over bits, but the season two is like, I've watched the first few episodes of season two, it's so much better, I think, and so good. I'm starting to see why everyone's raves about is this overlooked, like, awesome bit of Star Wars. So I need to get, but I can't really talk about that. That's just another one I will be checking out more of because I've only had the chance to see a few shows.
Also, basically required viewing to understand any of what's going on in all the Star Wars live action shows right now.
Yeah, and I was kind of like, I was a bit burned like off start. I was a bit like burned out through Star Wars. Like, I wasn't a big fan of Episode 9. Like, there's too many goddamn shows and things to watch. Like, so
I enjoy The Mandalorian.
I don't know. That's something I dropped off of, to be honest. I just felt there's too much content. I'm starting to slowly get back into it because I'm recognizing that there's good quality in there, even if there's maybe too much of it.
A lot of later Mandalorian as well, you will understand why it has more appeal to people who have seen the Clone Wars.
Right, yeah. I've heard Ahsoka like ties into that. I've not seen that either.
Oh, Ahsoka ties into that, but also into Rebels quite a bit. And I will say they have pretty much nailed Grand Admiral Thrawn. The ending of season one of Ahsoka is the only way that could have ended. And I was so here for it. And Thrawn's last line at the end of it just... perfection.
Ah, brilliant. Yeah. He's a major character, isn't he, in the expanded universe? So yeah, that's got something. That's something I'll be checking out more if I like quietly convince my kids to watch more of it with me, and I'll get into it more.
So other stuff I've been checking out. I did start watching an interesting little anime, Frieren. It's an interesting case because it's me actually watching something like fairly new as it's coming out anime wise, which yeah, that's something I do a bit less with the anime. So the setup is you have sort of standard sort of fantasy story where a group of adventurers go out on a 10-year quest to save the world from the big bad evil warlord.
10 years, wow.
And they succeed. And they all come back home. You've got like the elf, the dwarf, the humans. They come back home. They're celebrated as heroes. There's statues erected to them, stuff like that. And they watch a meteor shower. And the elf points out to them. She's like, oh, there's a better spot to get a view of this. You can see it much better outside the city. I can show you next time. And then she goes off to do her own thing, leaves them all behind. They carry on with their lives post-quest. This is all still the first episode. So anyway, she comes back the next time the meteor shower is due. The meteor shower happens once every 50 years.
Uh-huh, yeah.
So she gets back, and obviously, like, to her, it's barely been any time at all.
Yeah, yeah.
She's an elf, but she realises, like, you know, the connections all of her companions made while they were on the quest together that she didn't really feel, she's now starting to understand, like, how important that the time that shorter-lived people have is to them. And so, like, one of them's, like, super old. He has a hard time getting up. They get to the place to see the meteor shower this time. And then he thanks her for that. And then he dies of old age.
Jeez, it's quite heavy stuff.
And yeah, following that, she's like, you know what? I actually kind of probably need to slow down and appreciate life more and all the people around me more, because, you know, I missed out on all these connections with these people while they were living their whole lives.
Lots of introspection going on here. Like,
yeah. <set up. laughs> And so, yeah, she ends up like working with one of them, researching a bunch of magic after he gets her to make a promise, which leads to her taking on an apprentice. And yeah, I'm interested to see where the rest of that goes.
It's a great setup. What's the show called again?
Frieren. You should check it out.
I mean, what I find... it's interesting, like, you get some shows that have, like, very unique concepts, right?
Yeah.
But I think sometimes what's good is if you have a very established, like trope, like this epic fantasy adventure and settings, you can quite establish...
You can play with it. You can use it as the setup, yeah, as a jumping off point for something deeper.
Exactly, yeah. And you can play... Yeah, that's exactly it. And so some of those shows can be really, really interesting, I think. So that sounds really cool.
And there's one more show.
Yeah.
There was a show I showed you.
Oh, really. Yes, of course.
The last time we got together to discuss, to plan our next recordings, shortly before... I think it was shortly before I came down super ill and ended up losing my voice for 6 weeks.
And to compound it further, I'd recorded my reaction to it and then managed to lose the recording. So, like, it was all around not great. Yep, thankfully, you're doing better now health-wise, which is good.
Yeah, that whole recording is just a bit cursed. But yes, I showed you an episode of a show called Murder Drones, little independent production on YouTube. It's a show about an alien planet that humans colonized, and then all the humans died, and their worker robots just carried on living their lives. And so the company just sent a bunch of killer robots to terminate them all.
And weirdly, it's a comedy.
Yes.
Yeah. I enjoyed it. It was good. It was good. And it's free. It's free on YouTube. I mean, yeah.
It does raise a lot of questions. Like, why do the robots go through being teenagers? Why are these robots hormonal? How does that work? These are all questions that will not be answered. But instead, you get a bunch of dark comedy that leads into quite a bit of body horror and underlying cosmic horror.
Yeah, and it was really funny, but had like its own like world setting, which I agree didn't make total sense, but he just went with it. I enjoyed that. Very good. Now we've got some shows. As like a quick take of things we're just getting into, kind of thing. Whereas like now we're going to move on to like the shows we've really been heavily like watching and enjoying, basically. Yeah. Some of them are things that either like, you know, me or yourself, it's just been like us watching on our own. Some we've both been watching. So Amy, I'll let you take it away.
Yeah. So I've always been a fan of Star Trek. And right now, there's quite a lot of Star Trek shows going on. But my favourite one out of all of them right now is actually the animated one. Not the first animated Star Trek series, but the new one, Lower Decks.
Indeed, yeah.
Which is now on its fourth season.
That happened fast, didn't it?
Yeah. So they've kind of got a rotation. Where you'll get that they're basically making it so Star Trek is on all year round. So you'll get a season of Discovery, you'll get a season of Strange New Worlds, you'll get a season of Picard, you'll get a season of Lower Decks, and it's looped around and that's taken an entire year, and then you get something fresh like for each of them next. Now, Lower Decks, I've really been enjoying the... It heavily leans into established Star Trek lore, but doesn't take itself very seriously. And I quite like that. I like the characters. We've definitely got some more of the good stuff I'm enjoying where it explores those characters in season 4, particularly with the stuff it's setting up with Tendi, the Orion. Mm-hmm. Or, as many Orions know her, the mistress of the winter constellations.
Mm-hmm.
Not an ominous sounding name or anything.
Yeah.
But one interesting part I wanted to actually talk about isn't a Lower Decks episode at all. Because those maniacs went and did it. They did a crossover episode between two of their ongoing shows. And they did it with Lower Decks and Strange New Worlds.
Okay, yeah.
So one of the live-action shows has a crossover with Lower Decks, and the way they did it is really well realised. You have the intro.
Yeah.
Where you have the animated characters on their ship in the future, of the future.
Right.
And you have Boimler, who's like the... How to describe Boimler? He's the absolute goody two shoes, perfect like wants to be the perfect like Starfleet officer he imagines.
Yeah, yeah.
So he's talking about the TOS era, which obviously referencing the original series, but like in universe, like, oh no, it was like, what do you mean the TOS era? You know, those old scientists, like when back in the day when they were first exploring space. And yeah, they go down to a planet. It has a big time portal on it. he gets sucked into the time portal after doing stupid stuff.
Yeah.
And then you get the really weird part where you just have him falling out the other side, except now it's his actor.
Yeah, yeah. I was trying to work
with
out
his hair, like his hair is dyed purple to match the character. You know, he's wearing the uniform from the animated series. Like he sees the crew of the Enterprise from Strange New Worlds standing over him, just like, you look very realistic, and then passes out.
Yeah, that answers my question. I was like, how on earth does a cartoon appear in the live action world by having a like an actor equivalent? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, and then, well, it literally is the person who the actor who does his voice. And later on, this happens with another of the voice cast. So two of them end up in the past on the thing. And then at the one nice touch is, of course, the opening titles. They basically ran a filter over the standard opening titles to give it a full cel shaded look, and added in little elements the Lower Decks intro, like the big monster that suckers onto the warp nacelles and just gets dragged along with its big googly eyes looking everywhere. And yeah, and then at the end, you basically have a situation where all the crew of the ship in the past end up getting high, which leads to all of them. It just cuts to animated versions of all of them in the epilogue, voiced by their actors. Where it's just Almu, and they're just having a conversation about how everything turned out. And one's just like, wait, does everything look weird to you?
that's an eloquent, elegant solution to like how they appear as animated ones. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, a bunch of people talk about the musical episode of that season of Strange New Worlds, and I think that's highly overrated. The Lower Decks crossover is where it's at.
Cool, yeah. I mean, I've only seen the first couple of episodes, I think, based on your recommendation, and I like too many other shows, basically, like what I was watching.
Yeah,
and
it's one,
and I enjoy like bits of Star Trek. Like, I like the original series a lot, but like,
yeah, you're not as invested in Star
I'm not
Trek,
as invested
though.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah,
I mean, it is accessible. I like how when they reference something, they tend to try and make it something that it's just obvious from the name, like what it is. They don't go and explain it, but they don't need to explain it. Like, you know, it's like, oh, your date is actually a salt vampire. People can guess what a salt vampire is. they don't need to have seen the episode that a salt vampire appeared in back in the 60s.
Yeah, and I wouldn't want them to dumb it down. Like, people like are smart and can work this stuff out. Or
I mean, if
it.
You explain stuff, the joke doesn't work.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, you should just I'm totally for that. Like, I think I like shows that like put me to work in googling things after. Yeah. I think that's, I like it when they treat them as grown up.
Yeah, so Lower Decks continues to be good. They've expanded on more characters this season. Yeah, I'm liking it.
Very good.
So anyway, from science fiction, let's take a hard turn into fantasy, much like Matt Groening did.
Yes, indeed. So this is a show we've both seen, Disenchantment.
Yeah.
The last season.
We were going to do a thing where we just recorded our impressions of each episode, but again, my illness and stuff got in the way of that.
I mean, the illness sucked, of course, but also, I think I'd suggested we give each like episode a rating. I like independently and compare notes, and I realized that firstly, Disenchantment is kind of this serial adventure, so it's not it's at its best the less episodic it is, the better the show is. So that's a highly flawed idea. Secondly, I really don't really like ratings. Like I like reviews when they just tell you it and you're sensible enough to like work it out.
Yeah, no, that's the kind of reviews I prefer as well.
And how can you rate like a more emotional episode of Disenchantment with like more out and out?
The only way you can relate it, the only way you can apply a rating to it is that like any episode where Bean and Mora kiss is S tier. That's all that matters. That's the only rating system you need.
But yeah, no, I mean, I love the focus on their relationship. So like,
oh my god, the episode where you are just dying of cringe as you watch Bean just dig herself deeper and deeper and deeper, talking about like, but like the fish part of you is a part of you. That's like, and I was just like, oh my god, did you say a normal person? Or like totally fish.
Yeah, I love how like the relationship progresses to the lovers tiff. Like
I like the fact that scene makes it feel more realistic.
Yeah,
it's more believable relationship that you have those flaws in it.
What I love about their relationship is from the first like one of my favorite episodes is when was it season 3 or season 4 when they're on the boat together and they're just like bonding basically. I think it was season 3. Mm-hmm. And it's not like it's almost like a bottle episode. Is that what it's called? Like where it's just like, it's not really, nothing's really happening, but for a mermaid and being this like princess is so relatable. Like the kind of talk they have and the relationship they have, and they're so lovable and it feels like messy and flawed. It has a like, stop start like conversation.
Yeah, they're just, it's just so nice just having that whole episode just for them to just have that.
And yeah, I'm a big defender of Disenchantment. I've written an article about it, about how I think it's just underrated, basically, and I think people will regret, like, after it's gone, that, like, they weren't more into it. Because I think, like, the first season was a bit guilty of being a bit too episodic and not what it was quite promised. It doesn't have the rat-a-tat-tat of, like, classic Simpsons, like, although I still think it's quite funny. I like it. But I think what I argued in my article was the more it just settles into its groove of properly following the story, which season 3 onwards is massively delivered on, it somehow gets funnier. Like the less like they have standard sitcom setups, it's just like when you just go with the characters, go with the story, you're just naturally very funny and empathetic and likable. And what it has in common with the Futurama, I'd argue, is you feel more for the characters. I think you connect more with them.
I think it could stand to have a few less episodes per season. I think, like, they try and follow all the characters and have stuff going on, and I think some of those characters' plots just aren't there. They're not fully realized, and honestly, the stuff they pad out, I really don't like a lot of the Zog stuff. I really cannot stand a lot of that. It's just ugh.
I quite like the Zog stuff, but I guess it's each to their own. Yeah. I mean, I'm not sure if I like's the right word, but it's kind of like, he's an interesting character, I think. I'm pitching it to the wrong person. You just said you don't like it. It is a bit like very, throw a lot out there.
So I think one thing that can be said for it is, this is a show that is probably never going to suffer the fate of The Simpsons and Futurama. It's going to be left where it ended and probably not have its corpse dredged up every few years.
Yeah, that's true. I still wish...
I think it has that going for it. I'm saying that as a positive.
I still wish they had, like... I think they were meant to have 6 seasons from what I've read. And I feel... It's weird, like the last season, I want obviously no spoilers. It was just I enjoyed it and it was a nice ending, but it had a couple of episodes a bit weirdly slow paced, given how much I have to get through. And yet it still felt like other bits were rushed and not fully answered. And so I do feel it would have been nice if that had like a final movie or something to wrap it up, something a bit more epic. Then you get to kind of tell bits of it were cut short. And
I don't think it suffers from that on the same level. Yeah, I don't think it suffers from that on the same level as something like The Owl House.
Yeah, oh, for sure. That was clearly, like, it should have been longer.
Yeah.
No, that's true. That is true. Well, so continuing in the more fantastical vein, this is a show I've been watching, Vox Machina, which I think I spoke about ages ago, and then, you know, life got in the way. And then I just picked it up again. I was like, I kind of want to watch a fantasy-based, but adult, in quotes, like, animated show. And there's this show that I've completely forgotten about and dropped off after a few episodes. So Vox Machina, it's a spin-off from, if you're not aware, it's like a spin-off from the Critical Role, like, online D&D, like, streaming thing.
Loads of my friends are into it.
Yeah, I've never actually seen, I've seen D20, Dimension 20, but I've never actually seen I'm not really into the main source material, funnily enough.
Yeah, no, I'm completely unfamiliar with it.
Yeah, so that's not even my route. It's just a prominent, like, grown-up fantasy season with nice-looking animation, and that was enough for me, really. I guess, like, growing up, I was more into, like, sci-fi, really, and not too much fantasy, but then as I'm older, I've weirdly gotten quite heavily into fantasy and, like, an epic feeling of something, like a big quest and like kind
of I've always been really into both.
Yeah. It's just I that fantasy bit's grown on me over time, I think. And now, like, it's probably more of a go-to thing than sci-fi for me, weirdly. But anyway, so it is quite like, so it's just a group of like rogues, basically. But like all the different character, that's not the character class, if we're getting technical, but like they are like rogues from society. They're like anti-heroes kind of thing, like get together. We're just approaching the end of season one as I watch it. I know season two came out earlier this year, I think, or recently at least anyway. And it's just, you know, fighting, adventuring, going on personal journeys, all that kind of stuff. There's a bit of a backstory like that centers like the main through line in the show.
And it has the original voice cast from the podcast, right?
Yes, it does. It does. That's right. Yeah. So it's got a brilliant voice cast in it.
Literally, the only thing I know is like Laura Bailey's in it.
Yeah.
Who has voiced a lot of characters I've enjoyed playing as in video games.
Yeah, it's also got Ashley Johnson, is that her name, from Last of Us as well, like other games, and Infinity Train, and like a famous voice actor as well. So yeah, it's got some, it's got like, I was just looking through the cast, it's got Dominic Monaghan, I think. It's got like quite a lot of famous, surprisingly famous people just hidden amongst the cast, as well as like people from the original, you know, Critical Role phenomenon. And like it's interesting because I think it's subject of a bidding war. Red, like it's like Critical Role, as you say, is really popular. But yeah, so the show is quite it's very sweary and rude, and which I'm not normally into, like with the exception of Harley Quinn. But it's just like so I was worried it'd be a bit too like scatological and slapstick when I started it. But it is like but it's just fun. It's just quite interesting. It's fun, but quite dark at the same time. And once you get used to its tone, although the character just randomly breaks into, like, you know, 70s, 80s, like, soft rock, power chord-driven, like, songs to, like, get through problems, is very entertaining. But yeah, once you get into its vibe and just go with it, it's a lot of fun. So I'm enjoying that.
Okay, cool. So anyway, from one interesting reprisal of roles by the people who played them before, to another. So I've been watching Scott Pilgrim Takes Off.
Yes.
And when I say I've been watching, I basically binged the entirety of it. I was like, I'll watch one episode, and the next thing I knew, I'm like 7 episodes deep, and suddenly like the next thing I know, I'm hearing a cover of Konyoha Hurricane from classic 80s anime Bubblegum Crisis. And wow, I'm just like, what the hell is going on here? I'm loving this. This is this is something made absolutely for me. So yeah, Scott Pilgrim Takes Off. Interesting, just bringing the cast of the 2010 film back to voice all of their characters in an animated show based on like the style of the original comics. So yeah, that's something. The animation is really good. I love it.
Animation's fantastic. Sign Saru did it, isn't it? Who did
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, they're a great studio.
The voice acting is yeah, top notch. Yeah, I was not expecting this to be one of my favorite shows of the whole year, but it just came out left field, and it starts out with the same setup, recreating some of the scenes from like the original setup of it. Mm. And then very quickly, like within the first episode, veers off into its own story that honestly, I enjoy more than the original Scott Pilgrim story. It's really, really good. Has some neat little, if very predictable, twists. But yeah, I love how it does the thing. For example, every episode opens, after the first one, opens with the same scene of Ramona doing her hair in the morning.
Okay.
And there's just a palette swap on the colours.
yeah, she changes her hair a lot.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah, every episode she has the hair she does at the start of that episode.
Yeah, I love that. Like, I love how that's like a framing like thing for the episode. Yeah, that's cool.
I also have to say I was very, very here for the fan service in one of the first episodes. I am sad that I did not get the confirmed Kim Roxy ship, but the fan service was welcome.
Yeah, I love how open you are about this. Yeah, for the fan service.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, because I mean, my background to Scott Pilgrim, like, I'm gonna sound really annoying, be one of those annoying people who says this, but I was into it when it originally came out, even before the movie.
Yeah. You're a Scott Pilgrim hipster.
But it's my parents, like, very, very kindly got me
You were into Scott Pilgrim before it wasn't cool.
yeah. Before like any kind of backlash. Like I think my parents very kindly got me it was like best comics. It was an anthology of comics, and they had the Scott Pilgrim section, which I loved, and ended up just getting all the original comic series when it came out. I enjoyed the movie. The movie is great. I felt like some of the humor didn't quite translate as well as it did in the comic, even though I still like the movie, and it should have done better than it did commercially. But what I do love, like how, like, they did that table read on YouTube a couple of years ago, like how all the cast, no matter how big they got afterwards, seemed to like have really enjoyed working on the movie and always come back to it, which I think is quite really sweet.
Well, I can see in that case why it was so easy to get them all back together for this.
Like, literally, like, Chris Evans, he comes back for the table read, even though he's Captain America at that point, and his dog's in the background. He's just like, and Brendan, Ruth, and like everyone comes back for it. It's fantastic.
That probably explains like why they put so much into this show then.
Yeah, so but it's weird because I watched the first episode and I was nervous that they were just rehashing the original plot.
But then you get to the end, and we're not going to spoiler anything here, but that twist.
Well, I didn't get to the end because literally I had something else to do, I think. So I had to pause it. And so, but then I was like, well, so far it's just like, even though it's good, really well animated, it's good. Like, and I will watch it because I will watch it. I love Scott Pilgrim. Like, I was like, it's inessential. It's just a nice like visualization. Then I read all this stuff online about like a backlash about how it's completely different. It's like, oh,
it's appeals to me. Different such a good way.
Well, that's what I want though. I want it to be different. Yeah. What's the point?
Yeah.
So like, I'm now gonna watch it now, having read that. Once I get Netflix back, but that's an aside. So
I've been having such a good time with it though. It's like the performances are really good. Obviously, like some of the cast there, I've still been following loads of stuff they've been doing. Like, you know, Roxy, again, is an example. Like, you know, I've been watching The Owl House for the last few years. Yeah. So, like, Amity Blight. And, yeah, just seeing her just drop straight back into that character all these years later.
Yeah, I love, like, Kim Pine was my favourite character. I think, like, the secret for the people who write the comics.
Kim, it's weird because I'm having to reconcile that with, like yeah. I remember how cute I've always loved Kim. Kim was great. But I remember watching the film and I'm now having to reconcile, like, hearing her voice again, that, and I'm like, that's Dr. Jurati from Star Trek Picard. Like, she went on to, I'm used to her, like,
yeah.
Honestly, like, the only one I'm not used to being an adult at this point is Mae Whitman, because I keep hearing her still playing kids and stuff.
She naturally looks, I know it's animated so you can't see her, but she naturally looks quite young, I think, too. But
yeah, she does, yeah.
But yeah, like, I think if anyone's listening who, like, has read the movie, sorry, watched the movie,
the movie.
Yeah, what am I saying? Like, it is well worth reading.
I think
the original.
You need vegan powers to read the movie.
Yeah, to use that percentage of your brain that's not used, like, curds and whey or whatever, like, ridiculous thing he says. But I think it's well worth reading the comic, because the ending, the last three books are, like, almost entirely different from what happens. And the flashback to Kim is really fascinating. It's, like, super interesting. So just as a random thing. But yeah, I'm kind of jealous that you stuck with it longer. And I didn't give it, like, one goddamn episode before I got distracted.
You really
and
should.
Now I regret
Go
it.
Back, watch it. Make sure you have an entire day free. Because by the end of episode one, you're probably in the position of wanting to watch episode two, and then you will look up and 8 hours have passed and you've watched the whole thing and you're just like, oh, you know?
Yeah, and if you're listening in, if you're not seeing Scott Pilgrim or the movie or whatever, or even if you have but you weren't, like, the animation's, like, it's fantastic. It's such a great story and so much fun, but, like, quite empathetic, deep characters. So you just check it out, it's great.
Yeah, they. I really like how much the show takes the time to really flesh out the depth of all the characters. Even with the few episodes it has, it's all about going sort of deeper into characters who, like, the film, obviously on account of being a film, didn't get to devote the kind of time you can to in something, you know, like a graphic novel or something. You can't give that for a film adaptation. But they went so into it and developed the characters in such an interesting way in this. Oh, total aside, I remember when I was one of the handful of people who still had the Scott Pilgrim video game, also very highly rated.
Yeah, people
because
love that, don't they?
Shortly after that was only available for a short time after the film came out, and then it got delisted from all the stores, and I still had a copy on my Xbox.
Yeah, that's quite sought after now, isn't it?
And you couldn't buy it for the longest time until it just recently got a re-release.
Yeah, I think I struggled with the demo difficulty wise, but I then realized it's like it's more an RPG. You have to, it's really important to level up, and that's when you really get into it properly, isn't it? Yeah, but yeah, people love that, don't they? So from fighting evil exes to fighting the full forces of evil.
Ooh.
Nice transition onto. So I've been watching.
This is another one of you going back and watching something you missed, isn't it?
God, you know, for someone who's, like, involved in this animation podcast, I miss a lot of, like, stuff, don't I? The time it's out. There's just too much good stuff out there. Yeah, this is an interesting one. The Star versus the Forces of Evil. So, you know, from lockdown, I was discovering stuff like Avatar, The Last Airbender, Owl House, which, like, grew on me, like, osmosis to becoming one of my favourite ever shows. And
that's because it's one of the best ever shows.
Yeah. And so all these, like quote unquote, like, kid shows. Well, they are kid shows, but, like, ones that are, like, made with love and care and, like, depth and thought to it. And it's just, like, very enjoyable to watch as a supposed grown up I am. But so Star versus the Forces of Evil, I saw bits of the first season and it just didn't seem at that level of like those really top tier shows. And I think it's one of those shows like where it's, I'll group this in with like Clone Wars that I mentioned earlier, where I don't think the first season's its best representation. And we moved on to season 2 and 3, and it's significantly better. Basically, I was watching it with my kids who are enjoying it. It's like, it's kind of, each episode is like two stories in one, but some of them link to this overall plot. And it's just about Star and...
So kind of like something like... Kind of like something like Adventure Time, maybe, in that regard, then?
Yeah, definitely. And it's about this... it's about jumping between, like, parallel worlds, and there's a bad guy who's this... who's very, like Adventure Time, a very empathetic bad guy who goes on their own journey and completely changes over the course of the show.
Oh, we'll get into him later.
Yeah, but it's like, oh yeah, indeed, yes. so a little reference to another show coming up we'll chat about. But it's still very silly and fun, but it just has these moments like when the, you know, the two main characters like have like there's this unrequited crush going on, and there's a relationship with Star's like parents, so she can use like a magical like wand and devices to jump between worlds, like these magic scissors that cut between different places, and it's just like a fun, frenetic fantasy show, with lots of, with a talking unicorn head who's got a lot of attitude, and it's just it's crazy, but it'll just like, it'll just jump to like a completely unrelated like set of side characters who are like the henchman or villain or somewhere else.
I like that concept when a show does that. Normally it's just for like a one-off episode. I like when shows do that a bit more.
Yeah. So it's just like, it's creative and more interesting once it settles into its groove a bit. Like I just think the first season wasn't properly developed and fell back on like slightly tired humor for me personally, at least.
Yeah.
So it's just like, you're taking me by surprise, and now quite look forward to watching it. So I'm still getting into it. I've not seen like all of it, but it just is like, if you're bored, non-Disney Plus is worth like checking out, especially if you want like a more family friendly show, or just something a bit more frenetic and different, really. So I'm enjoying that.
Cool. So like scissors that cut between different worlds. So like that just sounds like a less subtle knife.
Yeah. It did remind me a hell of a lot of his Dark Materials for sure. But it's not quite as like somber or political. There are some power play things going on, but like it's not quite as like deep as that to be fair. But yeah, like a less subtle knife is a great way of describing it, Amy. Thank you.
well, if you're finished with that, I guess if you can't beat the forces of evil, join them with the next show I've been watching, which is season 4 of Harley Quinn.
Harley Quinn, yes.
So have you seen season 3?
Yeah, season 3 was, as all the seasons have been, fantastic.
Do you remember how it's all wrapped up with Ivy getting a job offer?
Oh, vaguely, yeah. I have to confess, it's been a while since I've
heading
seen
up
it.
The Legion just of
streaming,
Doom.
Have, like, the limited time window is available, but yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I continue to be always on edge that at some point, like the horrible Warner Brothers axe that's been swinging around for every decent show is going to hit this.
Yeah.
Because the asset stripping of that company continues apace.
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it?
We lost so many good shows. But Harley Quinn is about the only one that's still going. And while I think this season has some flaws and has some weaker bits, honestly, the continuation of all the stuff, like, you know, with Harley and Ivy, like the ongoing clashes in their relationship and how they're making it work, and the some of the ridiculous things with Lex this season. Oh my fucking... Where... There's a spaceship and there are no words. There are no words for his spaceship in this season.
Is it inappropriate in some kind of way, I'm guessing?
Also, I will say, if you haven't seen it yet, keep an eye out for Chekhov's potato.
Okay.
Ill-advised uses of the Legion of Doom microwave by Jim Gordon.
I love how it delves into like the microwave. For the love of God, it's great.
Yeah, no. But yeah, basically it continues to be a quality show worth watching. I can't remember, did we get around to talking about the Valentine's Day special? The very problematic Valentine's Day special.
Problematic, right.
To give it its full title, that's its actual title.
I thought that was your comment.
No, not a commentary on it, just Harley Quinn's very problematic Valentine's Day special.
It's a great title. Yeah, yeah. So I've seen seasons 1, 2, and 3, and like literally I just couldn't find a way of streaming.
Miss the Valentine's Day special then?
I've not seen that either, yeah.
Ah, the quest for vegan Lazit balls. That honestly is one of the finest, like, finest episodes of the show, and you should definitely check it out.
I know, I will. Like, I'm just literally waiting until I can get my hands on it. It's such a great, it's one of my favourite shows. I think it's just so funny. It's
consistently funny as well. Like, the acting continues to be top notch, the writing continues to be good. It's just good. And I like, you know, the art style is still nice. So
yeah, it's got all these great elements, but it just like it's consistently funny. I think
it's reliable. Definitely.
Yeah.
So I'm seeing a theme with the next one on your list, Joel, which after the last one and looking at this one, I think it's giving away a bit that one of us here has kids.
Yeah, and this is the best kind of podcast where you can jump from Harley Quinn to Bluey. Yes, I've been watching lots of Bluey. Okay. And at least 80% of that has been driven by my kids. I think Bluey, right. I thought this would actually be an interesting show to talk about because honestly, it has been a cartoon I've seen a lot of recently. So I feel like I should acknowledge that.
It's a little out of my wheelhouse, so I'm happy to hear about it.
So, Amy, like, there's a lot of, like, kids' shows are generally better, but there are just really some anodyne, like, horrendous ones you have to sit through. So, like,
I saw your Paw Patrol review.
Yeah, I got a bit carried away with that. If anyone's not seen it, I did a critical... So I let my kids... I do a movie morning thing with my kids, and I foolishly let them pick, and they picked the Paw Patrol 2001 Paw Patrol movie. I say that because there's another very similarly titled Paw Patrol movie from a couple of years later, and it was weirdly not terrible. It was actually okay. It was better than the TV show, which is flawed and very formulaic. But I found myself enjoying it. But I don't know, that's because I got obsessed with this incredibly deep analysis about Mayor Humdinger, whether he's a visionary or misunderstood genius, and whether Liberty resembles is an embodiment of the American dream or not. I don't know. Maybe I got a little carried away by analysing.
So how would you contrast something like Paw Patrol with Bluey?
Yeah, let's get back on topic. Right. So basically, I have to watch stuff like, you know, Bing, oh my God, and like Peppa Pig is just like, they're not great, right, for an older person who has to sit through it. Bluey is good for someone who has to sit through it. And there's actually, and I think, I don't know why, like, I think it was in The Guardian that had, like, an article about the making of Bluey, like, because a lot of, like, parents end up watching it. And I think they took Peppa Pig and said, we want to make our own version of that, but with a dad who's not terrible and who is actually a modern dad who does stuff and for the kids. And what's, so Bluey's is fun show for the kids, and like all my different ages all enjoy it. But also, it's relatable is the number one word. It feels like what being a modern parent Louis is one of the best representations of that, basically.
Okay.
You have them having little arguments. You have them messing up. You have them, like, getting trapped in their own, like, things with kids where they're not quite explaining it properly, and then it gets turned back on them. You have them trying to deal with a situation, utterly failing. It's just one of the most relatable modern-day parenting things I've seen. I've still seen the criticism that, like, you know, the dad always has time to play every little game the kid does and, like, follows their rules to a T, like, no matter how embarrassing that is. And, you know, like, in the day-to-day life, you maybe can't do that all the time, and it is a bit, you get a bit jealous of this, like, cartoon dog, like, being, like, a more, like, a more impressive parent than you are. But generally, it's just, like, super relatable, and it is not afraid to go for, in an accessible, kid-friendly way, some quite serious topics or some more slightly unusual structured episodes, which is not saying that much compared to, like, you know, things like Avatar and, like, top-tier shows we've been talking about. But by the standards of kids' shows, it just feels like such a relief to have a well-made, creative, thought-through show, even if it still skews very young.
I mean, you're limited in that when you're aiming for a very young audience. So it's good when they pull it off.
And I talk about, like, you know, there's a couple, like, sadder episodes and deeper episodes, but even just, like, the silly ones are a bit more creative. Like, there's this dance mode. I shouldn't explain this, like, to anyone who's got kids. Like, you'll regret hearing this, but there's some, if your kids get on and that, this idea, but there's something called the dance mode game they play where if they hear some music and you, like, hit them on the tail or something, they have to dance no matter what situation they're in. So even if they're at the queue in the post office or something, you have to, like, just dance.
No.
Like, it's more like, yeah, thank God my kids have it's mortifying but, like, hilarious. And to just have, like, very creative, even the silly bits are very creative, like having, like, fun games or silly things like that where they treat these, like, childlike games, like, with the utmost seriousness, like, which is, like, relatable as well, you know.
I'm just seeing the potential for experiences like that time I got on a train that was timed just after, I believe it was like the Frozen stage show thing had just come out.
Yeah.
Just down the road from the station. And so I get on a train and there's just a million kids. And they're all singing. They're all in their little princess outfits and they're all singing.
Wow.
And the looks on some of the parents' faces, you can tell because they're like, they know they're going to be listening to this, like, basically until they get them off to bed tonight.
Yeah. Like when they get obsessed with a certain song, like, you have to play it like 5 times on the way home and repeat. It's just like it just thinks, yeah, that is relatable.
But it's at times like these I am glad I don't have kids.
Yeah, but yeah, in all honesty, I've been watching a lot of Bluey, sadly. Yeah.
Well. In that case, I think it's time to hit the audience with a jarring shift of tone.
Another one.
From something very much for kids to put something very much not for kids with Hell of a Boss. Season 2 of that show has been getting well underway. We just had Mammon's magnificent mid-season special. And yeah, Season 2, it is continuing to deliver what this show about horny demons in hell is best at, which is all the deep emotional stuff and, like, relationships between all the people in it. We might have found possibly a more wholesome relationship than Moxie and Millie's relationship this season, as well as possibly one of the most toxic relationships in the show. The latest episode had one of the absolute best songs all about... Well, I mean, the song is just Fuck You. It's the song. It's really good. And the show just keeps getting better. It has so many episodes deeply dealing with characters like feelings, either, you know, about their life or about one another, characters resolving a bunch of the trauma that they have, like if either through their, you know, from their past or ongoing in their present, relationships, like dealing with going somewhere with all the like sort of characters reconciling who've had really bad relationships for a long time, and it's hell of a boss for a show that started as basically a filler spin-off project to the show that actually got picked up by an actual like an actual station.
Yeah,
a show that actually Haspin Hotel we will be getting next year. But for a show that started off, like I say, as a spin-off project for them to do sort of in the meantime while all the stuff to do with that was in the works, it has really grown into something so deep, with characters you care about, with some fantastic animation, great fight scenes, great songs. It just keeps on delivering, hell of a boss. Have you watched much beyond season one, or?
No, I watched more of season. I watched more episodes after we did our podcast thing, I haven't gotten to like season one, season two. Yeah. I mean, sorry, but having said that, I recognize a lot of what you're talking about from what I did see of the show. In that, it's got that anarchic energy and like very sweary, like crazy like content to it, but it's the characters are, and I've seen other shows that do that where they try to go for emotional beats or character stuff, and for me it falls really flat because like it just tonally doesn't work and you're not really invested. Was this show, for some reason, you are invested and it does work.
You care about all of these characters and about their relationships.
Because I think maybe part of it is it doesn't feel like it's to the side. It feels like central, even though when they're doing all these crazy humor and violence and off the wall stuff, it like the characters are still central to that and driving that forward. I think that's still one thing centered in it. And it doesn't, and it keeps that like interest in the characters throughout, no matter what happens. Even when they're like fighting against cherubs. Like, which is bizarre. Like, I remember that action scene really well. But also, like the songs kick ass. The songs are great. Like,
oh, the songs, yeah.
More shows, so many good songs. Most shows should just routinely have songs in them, I think, as an aside. But yeah, so yeah, I will check out season two. It actually, like, we mentioned Murder Jones before. Like, it put me. I'm not watching Murder Jones because I want to get through Hell of a Boss first. Because
that makes sense. No, that's fair.
YouTube
Hell of a Boss. Hell of a Boss is. I mean, I'd say Hell of a Boss is without a doubt the better show. It's just such a good show. It's amazing. It's consistently really great quality.
Yeah. No. It's a great show, and it's what we said this at the time, didn't we? In the like a primer. Episode, it's free. Like, you just watch
you
it.
Should all, it's almost if you like, haven't been watching it, you should, what are you doing? Get over there and watch it now.
So we should move from a hell for everyone to hells of a more personal nature.
The show that came completely out of left field and just blindsided everyone. I did not expect this. Fiona and Cake.
Yeah, so just to set the context for anyone's not heard of that show, so it's a spin-off from Adventure Time.
Well, originally it started as individual episodes of Adventure Time that were basically sort of non-canon stuff set in the realm of the Ice King's fan fiction.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
But, so I was worried when I saw that this was a thing, that it was very much going to be just, again, more of a cynical attempt to just milk the Adventure Time franchise a bit more.
Yeah.
After we'd gotten, like, we'd got the closure that the characters all really needed for the most part. And, like, the bits that were unresolved, you know, were very much just a case of like, yeah, sometimes the world sucks and some things won't get resolved with a happy ending. But yeah, Fiona and Cake surprised me in being more than I thought it was going to be.
So it's I'm about 7 episodes in out of 10, so I've not quite finished the season, but I've seen most of it, and a couple of my kids are really, one of my kids is really enjoying it with me actually, even though I was worried because it gets quite violent and dark at certain points, which so I wasn't sure they would be, but they're enjoying it.
Okay, good.
And neither of us have I've seen quite a lot of Adventure Time, but not sequentially or consistently, basically.
Have you seen the sort of arc towards the end of the show?
No, I've not actually.
So if you've not seen the finale, you won't realise how Simon and Betty's story was resolved.
No, I'm just enjoying it as I knew going into it that I was missing out on a lot of the like background to it. But it's just a good show. Like I think Fiona, Fiona and Cake. It's just got like what the bits I've seen of Adventure Time, what works really well, and that kind of that humor and that empathetic understanding and stuff mixed with these really surreal, like crazy concepts and head trips and flights of fancy and things. And it's very engaging, but like, and quirky and interesting. But it's kind of
and meaningful.
Yeah,
that's the thing. It's really getting into. By the point you're up to, it's probably at the point where it's seriously like interrogating stuff like Simon and Betty's relationship, for example.
Yeah. I think that was quite heavy in the last episode we just watched.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's also the idea was. Like I know it might not technically, I'm going to call it a spin-off anyway, shorthand. Like I think like
it is a spin-off. Yeah.
I think it's interesting like when you like, sometimes they work really well and take on a life of their own kind of thing, and you think like Stephen Colbert report from the Daily Show is a very random example, like Frasier from Cheers. Like Cheers is mentioned a lot in this show, by the way. So you kind of get those things that like take off. But I think the danger is like if something feels really complete, like Adventure Time like did from what you described, then it just seemed a bit risky and you're just extending something for the sake of it kind of thing.
Yeah.
But it's just nice that it's just a good show, like very simply. You know, it's engaging and fun and like and it's quite surprising in its plot turns, I'd say, as well, actually. You don't quite know what's going to happen next in it, I'd argue.
It works nicely, though, as like a self-contained story that wraps up the plot threads of some of the characters from Adventure Time, but without sort of being too much of a just rehashing of stuff. For the sake of having more Adventure Time.
And even if they did that, it's only like 10 episodes. It's not like... It's like quite a self-contained thing, isn't it? At least at the moment.
It was better than it had any right to be.
Very good.
So to wrap all of this up, what shows are you looking forward to in the coming months or year, Joe?
So there's one reasonably impending like thing that will come around very soon, which I'm looking forward to, and one very long-term thing I'm looking forward to where we have very
I'm
going to
make guesses at what they are.
Yes,
the close-term one is season 3 of Hilda.
You've read my mind, indeed.
I am looking forward so much to that. I can't wait for more Hilda. I've been looking forward to it basically since we last got some Hilda.
My kids rewatched season 1, 2 and the Mountain King movie as well recently-ish.
So good.
So it just reminded me of what a fantastic show it is. You know, like I mean, we discussed like I felt the movie was a little hit and miss, and like we discussed which season was our favorite. But all in all, it's such a like you shouldn't take it for granted. It's such a brilliant show.
I'm really looking forward to spending Christmas just snuggling up cozy with my loved ones watching Hilda, because yeah. It's just one of those things, you know, one of those shows.
And you can probably guess the longer term thing then, I'm guessing.
It's going to be coming at the end of 2024, and that's Arcane season 2.
No, it wasn't that actually.
Although, see, when you said long term, I was like, maybe.
Although I did, I watched, based on your recommendation, I watched, I'm about halfway through season 1, and I was really enjoying Arcane until my Netflix countdown, what's it called? Netflix, clampdown affected me, so I need to find a way of getting access again.
Oh no, no more Netflix account sharing.
Now, how dare they like try to monetize, get money?
Remember when they were like, we're very pro people sharing accounts?
Yeah.
Remember when that was a thing?
We knew it was.
What
hollow.
Happened to you, Netflix?
I know it's all like the Avatar.
Now I'm just thinking back to Scott Pilgrim and Ramona delivering DVDs for Netflix.
Yeah, that was like, I did see that bit. That was weird. Like,
remember when that was a thing, when Netflix delivered DVDs?
It was just weird though that they changed it to Netflix reference. It makes sense given that they're at least part funding it, but it just felt a bit weird to me. But anyway,
I think it worked really well. It was like, wow, yeah, remember 2010 when Netflix delivered DVDs?
This is a massive digression, but like I used to quite like Love Film, like when you ordered like a certain DVD. I sound so old now, don't I? But like it was like, sometimes if you have everything, you have like nothing, kind of like, sometimes it's nice that, so even if I wasn't in the mood for a certain film, I got something like slightly stranger, because that's what you got, you just watched it, and it's kind of good for you to try different stuff. I sound really old, I'm going to stop. Yeah. Remember back in the day when, yeah, anyway.
Oh, don't get me started on remember back in the day, no, you'll get me on a whole tangent.
Anyway, like, the fact that I misty-eyed over that and not Blockbuster shows what a ridiculous conversation.
Anyway, what are you looking forward to? What's the show if it's not Arcane?
Super long term. It's the newly minted like studio Avatar are up to.
Oh, that's a long way off. Yeah, more Avatar stuff.
It's come up in my mind though, because I've seen, before the Netflix clampdown, I did see the trailer for the live action Avatar reboot. So if anyone's not aware, so like Avatar Last Airbender had the sequel series Legend of Korra.
Stop doing live action Avatar.
Yeah, so like Legend of Korra is one of my favorite series. Like both are great. Some of my favorite series, but I possibly love Legend of Korra even more actually. Then the Netflix agreed to do a live action Avatar, and the two creators of it like kind of fell out basically, or felt they weren't an integral part of the project and quit Netflix's live action version, which is basically, from what we can see, a relatively direct remake of the main show. We don't know like if they've got more changes or depth of things, but it seems like a slightly unimaginative, like just live action remake that isn't really needed, I'd argue. But I've not seen it. Maybe I'm being harsh, but it's not good. It's not great. The creators have dropped out, who I have a lot of faith in, based on Korra. Even the comics are good. Like I just kind of have faith in them, and so it's a shame that they're not involved. So then Nickelodeon, like they saw like the success of Avatar coming on Netflix, especially around the pandemic, and it did really well. So they brought in the two creators to do a new studio Avatar, which will create new, far more interesting content rather than just a rehash of something that's already great as it is.
Yeah, that's the. I am hopeful for how that turns out. We'll see how that ends up playing out.
Yeah, and they've released very little information. So you're right, it is ridiculously long term. But just seeing the live action trailer made me think I'm gonna like bide my time for the more exciting new content that'll come out, but whether it's good or bad, who knows?
Yeah.
Although having read a lot of the post-Avatar comics, like, if they just reuse some of those storylines, it would actually be a really good show, like, depending on what they
do. Yeah, honestly, you could spin some of those into frankly, another season of Korra.
Indeed. So, Amy, what are you looking forward to?
So, short term, I've got a couple of shows. So, obviously, Hilda, we've already covered. Hazbin Hotel, we get to finally see more than just the pilot episode. So,
okay.
I think that is a show that is going to have a lot of criticism levels at it, because it is not, it's going to be different from the pilot, and everyone's had so long since the pilot to build up expectations for it, and in the meantime we've had Hell of a Boss go on to become such a hit.
Yeah.
That I think Hazbin Hotel isn't going to live up to a lot of people's expectations at this point. So, but I'm still optimistic that it could deliver something good.
Yeah, I mean, I think if it's from the same like kind of creative team, or at least partially, like it's good to have like faith. I guess you're trying to protect yourselves that you're not crushed
we'll
if it's not quite what you
we'll
expect.
See how it turns out. Further down the line, I really liked the recent Masters of the Universe series, and that's getting a follow-up.
Oh, cool.
So spoilers for Scott Pilgrim. The twist in Scott Pilgrim ended up being the same one they pulled in the last Masters of the Universe series.
Okay.
Which made, in both cases, for a really good show. So, yeah, I'm optimistic for another good season of that. And yeah, further down the line, long term, more Arcane, yes please. More of just my delightful, gorgeously animated lesbians, please.
You got a whole like subcategory of those shows.
I have certain tastes, what can I say?
No, indeed. That's great. I'm gonna throw in a couple more things actually I've just thought of.
Okay.
Like maybe medium term, just like fill the gap. So like I saw the trailer the other day for the Miyazaki's like No, Now I'm Really Am Retired film. Like he keeps like coming back from retirement, Studio Ghibli, like lead guy really. He's got is it The Boy and the Heron, I think it's called. And like I like Studio Ghibli rather than love them. Like it depends which movie it is. Like I think
No, not everything's going to be exactly to your tastes.
Yeah, I think Whisper of the Heart, Kiki's Delivery Service and Laputa are great. Other films it's hit and miss. Like everyone's, as you said, is doing so much stuff. I think, but the trailer looked really wild. I was quite surprised by it actually. It seemed like gave me Mononoke vibes a little bit. It seemed a bit on the darker and more intense end of like his output, which you don't always get if he's the lead on it compared to like his colleagues at the studio. So that looked interesting. Another thing is one of my favorite cinema experiences like ever, let alone this year, was the Last Spider-Verse film.
Okay. I've still not got around to seeing it, so
I mean, not only did I see it, I saw it in this like 4DX cinema thing where the seat moves, which was a little distracting. Like you don't need to do that, but like it was great at the cinema. Like so the first one, I forget what is it Planet of the Apes, like Into, like Beyond, Across, I forget the order, like how they call it, but it's all the Spider-Verse films basically. So the second one came out earlier in 2023, and it was just a brilliant film. Like, and the word of mouth's been fantastic on it. It did really well, I think, commercially, because people just said such good stuff about it and got other people to watch it.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of good things about it.
And it's visually spectacular, but the stories, it's one of the best Spider-Man stories, I'd argue, actually. And the progression of the villain in it is, like, very clever. Like, it has the plot development's very clever in it. But it leaves you desperately needing to see the third film, which is coming out soon.
Yeah, that's a thing we've experienced for years with films where they end up stretching out the plot of a second film into a third film.
Yeah, I just like really heartily recommend it. Like
all the way back to stuff like Back to the Future.
Yeah. Second and third films went back to back in that, weren't they? And then you had to, as soon as you saw the end of the second one, you had to see the third one. It has a similar vibe to that without going.
Yeah, I mean, the second one had the trailer for the third one at the end of it. A trailer as an actual trailer.
Yeah.
Which is where they got the names from, because they used to be at the end of films.
Ah, okay. I never worked out what the name was.
They happened at the end of films.
I didn't know that.
And then they realised they had a captive audience at the start of films. And they moved the trailers to the front.
Which makes sense, because like you're just waiting for the film then, aren't you? Rather than like desperate to leave at the end. But yeah, so that's cool. But yeah, like Spider-Verse films, like I've become much less generous to like the overload of Marvel and DC films coming out.
There's too many of them, and they're not all that great. The Spider-Verse, the first film was very refreshing. So the Spider-Verse films, I do mean to see the second and third one at some point. I might end up watching them back to back.
Yeah. But I was a bit nervous about the second one, because it's like, now, when you have a refreshing take and things, like, where else do you go with it? But they actually tie it to like really strong story, and
that's good.
That's great. So yeah, the third one will be really good.
Awesome.
Mm.
Well, it's been good catching up on all those things, and I hope we've given listeners a few ideas that they hadn't maybe thought about.
It's just like so much good, like so many good cartoons. Like there's even more we could have talked about.
We're living in a good time for cartoons.
That's fantastic. Well, thank you, Amy, so much.
Thank you. And thank you, everyone else, for listening.
Thank you, and take care.